Right then. So, we tried to record with your little brother.
Yes.
It turns out his attention span is not long enough for an episode just yet. Mm-hmm. So we have regrouped. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do it classic, me and you. Okay?
Yeah.
And we are going to talk today, for 'tis the season.
To be jolly, fa la 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 la.
Glorious. It is the Christmas season. And last year I didn't do a special Christmas episode. So I feel like we should make up for that this year by doing the most Christmas episode we can do. By talking about nothing but Christmas for the entire episode. The history of Christmas, specifically how it has been celebrated in Britain. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Hey up, I'm Joe Heathcote, and this is Consistently Eccentric, a British history podcast where we try to make sense of some of the lesser known and more absurd people and events these islands have produced. So let's get started with...
Let's start off with the obvious question. Where are we going to begin? Where in history, Evie, are we going to begin?
A thousand years ago.
1,000 years ago. So around the time of the Norman Conquest.
Yeah.
With Edward the Confessor, who was a very Christian... He built Westminster Abbey. He was a very devout man. It makes sense that he would want to celebrate the birth of Christ. I like your thinking. You've obviously been paying attention, but you are wrong. Would you like another guess?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Where Jesus is born.
Another great guess. I mean, that would be the time to begin celebrating someone's birthday, really, wouldn't it? The day of their birth.
Yeah.
But again, you're wrong. And you're not just wrong, you're significantly wrong.
Can I have one last guess?
No.
Oh, please.
Go
just
on
one
then.
More. Okay. The place with Stonehenge and the Norwegians.
Okay, you've got to pick one or the other.
Norwegians.
Vikings?
No, Norwegians.
Right, no, not Norwegians, darling. I think you're getting a little bit confused. So, this story actually begins during the Neolithic era, when humans first made their way to the cold, rainy island known as Great Britain, because it took them a long time to get here. Because while Europe was a nice sunny place with lots of resources, we live on kind of a barren little windswept rock. So it took longer for humans to make it. But we're beginning there because that was the time when the people who'd made it to Britain began celebrating the winter equinox.
Which is a festival that goes on for 7 days.
It's at one day.
One day.
And what is it? What's the winter equinox, do you know?
It's the shortest day of the year and it's when people party and stuff like that.
It's when pagans get excited, yes. Because this was before Christianity, so everyone was a pagan. And we know that it was a very important day to Neolithic people because they built Stonehenge. And we think Stonehenge is like a giant calendar. And the biggest stone in Stonehenge is designed so that it lines up with the sunrise on Midwinter's Day. So they obviously thought that that was a very important day of the year. And if you were setting up a calendar and you were picking the last day of the year, you'd probably pick the shortest one, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
If anything, we're a week and a bit out when we set our New Year's.
Yeah.
Anyway, we know it was important, but we also know that they partied because archaeologists who were working at the nearby Durrington Walls, discovered that the Neolithic people must have held great feasts around that time of year because when they looked through their garbage, they found that there were regular intervals where there were far more animal bones than at other times of the year. And that was because they were eating quite a lot of pig and quite a lot of cow.
And fish?
No, just pig and cow, no fish.
Dairy?
Yeah, there's a little bit of dairy. Sometimes these pigs and cows would have been driven, so the people who owned them would have brought them hundreds of miles to these feasts. So it was a very big day. If you're willing to drag a cow a couple of hundred miles just for a feast, it must be a pretty important feast.
Yeah. Sounds like a really, really, really important feast.
And like I say, there was also milk and cheese, because before you kill the cow, you may as well milk it.
Yeah.
Hmm?
You still shouldn't kill cow. You need milk from it.
Yeah, but when it stops making milk, suddenly it's beef. Everything has more than one use. There would be singing, they think. I mean, we can't prove that they'd sing in.
Yeah, but I think it's a good thing to sing.
They'd probably be dancing, because if you're going to sing, you're going to dance. And there's evidence that some of the richer people would even share gifts that were mainly made of bronze, which was the new up-and-coming metal at that time.
Metal and a medal.
Yes.
And a colour.
It is the medal of being just good enough.
And also a name.
Bronze? Who's called Bronze?
A mermaid character I made up.
Okay, fine. And you can also use it to name mermaid characters. What a very versatile metal bronze turned out to be. And some of the braver people, or possibly more drunk people, got drunk on fermented milk, would then leap across the big fire pits to encourage the sun to come up again next year. Because if they didn't do it, the sun would probably just never rise again. Because that's how it works, isn't it?
Yes, that's why I'm jumping over the fireplace.
You can't jump over our fireplace, Evie. It's built into a wall. What you're saying is you're going to jump into a wall and then fall into a fire.
No, I'll jump over one bar, run across, jump on.
Oh, you're going to walk over the fire now?
And then I'll burn jump your feet. Into it and then off it. No, not that. The fire, the one in the living room.
Right, so I know that for Christmas I have to ask for a fire guard to protect you from yourself. At least I know. Thank you for letting me know ahead of time. Anyway, let's leave the Neolithic peoples behind.
Yeah.
Because stuff happened, and just after when Jesus was born, we got some visitors in Britain called the Romans.
The Romans? Yes. Boo!
Well, I mean, they did a few good things for us. Why are you booing the Romans now?
They tried to set fire to the town.
No, when we did that, Boudicca set fire to the town. The Romans were just living in it.
No, the Romans came in their boat across the hill and then they started setting fire to everything.
Those were the Vikings and that was Le Grand Parc. C'est magnifique. That was a stage show, Evie. They were Vikings as well, they weren't Romans. The Romans were the ones in the amphitheatre, you know, in the Colosseum.
Chariots.
With the chariots, yeah. Anyway, the Romans in Britain. We did actually have an amphitheatre for chariots in Britain, you know. There was one. We did have a circus. But by Roman times, midwinter was marked with at least 5 days of feasting.
Ooh.
Where they would get loose, get drunk and party. And it was called...
I don't know.
What do you think it was called?
5 days of Christmas?
No!
Icicle Fest.
Icicle Fest's a good one. But no, it was called Saturnalia.
How was I supposed to know that?
Because you know the Roman pantheon of gods, do you not? You know all the Roman gods?
No, I don't.
Like Mars for war. No? Okay, well...
I haven't learnt it yet.
Saturn was the chief god. He was the numero uno god, and they celebrated him 5 days over midwinter. It was a fun party time when everyone was allowed to gamble, so you're allowed to play with dice, and slaves got some time off, which is lovely. Because if you're a slave, you don't often get time off by definition.
Yeah.
And they were allowed to insult their masters.
Like what?
Like make jokes at their expense. And in fact, the masters would often serve the slaves food rather than the other way around. So it's a very exciting time for the slaves. But you feel like they couldn't push it too much because after the 5 days, they go back to being a slave for the other 361 days of the year, which is, you know...
That's actually a bit unfair for the slaves because they only get 5 days off and we get 2 a week nowadays.
Yeah, we do.
At school and at work.
Well, I think of it like the works Christmas party. You can have a lot of fun, but if you take it too far... You'll be paying the price for the rest of the year. You don't want to be the person at work who puts their bum on the photocopier and photocopies their bottom because people will look at you different for the rest of the year. You don't want to be the one who drinks too much and throws up all over the boss's desk. He'll say he's okay with it. He'll say it was all just, you know, boys will be boys, but you're not going to get the good jobs for the rest of the year.
You don't want to to accidentally knock your arm into the boss's plant from on his desk and break his most favourite plant pot. Because yeah. Then it might be a really expensive one and he can't buy a new one.
Yes, the cost of plant pots has gone up recently, hasn't it? I blame the inflation, right? They just don't think of how it's affected garden centres. That's the real hidden tragedy of the last year. Unlike the Neolithic people, the Romans, they wouldn't just eat pig and off cheese. They had a whole range of fancy foods.
Cockles!
No. Possibly, actually. I can't say no. I don't know if the Romans ate cockles, and we definitely had a lot of them. But some of the ones that they liked the most, especially over Saturnalia. They liked dates and figs.
Like dates and figs?
Yeah, you've had a lot of dates and figs. You've had dates from Jerusalem, because Mar and Pooh Bear gave you some.
Yeah.
I don't particularly like them. There's something about the texture. It's a bit...
I think that too.
I feel the same way about Turkish Delight. Like the flavour, can't get on with the texture. Pine nuts.
Like pine nuts?
You may never have actually had just a raw pine nut, yeah. But what you definitely have had is pesto, which is made with pine nuts.
Yeah.
And you love a bit of pesto.
Yeah, I do.
Very middle class child I've raised.
I have it on my pasta.
You do? Snails.
Escargot. Escargot.
Mendip wallfish. Lovely, lovely taste.
Wallfish.
Dormice.
That's just so evil.
Wolf nipple chips. Wren spleens. Otter's noses. Get them while they're hot, they're lovely.
Did they actually have those?
No, I'm just quoting a film by Monty Python called The Life of Brian. Sorry.
Okay.
But what they did have was something called garum, which was a strong-tasting sauce made from fermented fish.
I know what they should do. If they had cockles back then, they should have put the fish sauce on the cockles.
Right, to make the fishiest meal known to man. You're having fermented fish on shellfish.
Exactly.
You have an iron constitution, Evie. Your tummy can withstand nuclear bombs, obviously.
Yeah.
Most people would be on the toilet for the next 4 days of Saturnalia if they had that on the first day. They'd miss the rest of it. Anyway, moving on from that culinary disaster that you're describing. By medieval times, the midwinter celebrations had become known as Yule.
Also known as a small man that works for an ogre, and they put people in sacks and hide them under the big tree in Hilda so that the ogre can make stew with them.
Right. It's not what I have written here. Okay, I have a different definition, because what my phone is telling me is that Yule is a Saxon word meaning midwinter. So it's more a change of name, change of branding than anything else. But one thing that the Saxons had got right, they'd extended the celebrations even further than the Romans had to a full 12 days, which became the 12 days of Christmas that we still have to this day. So we've got the first thing, you know, we've had the feasting, that's kind of Christmassy, but this is the first thing that's a proper staple of Christmas, the 12 days of Christmas.
Yes.
My true love gave to me.
A portrait in a pear tree.
See, you know, there you are. You've got it now. I can't remember all of them. There's some lords in there. At some point, there's some maids milking the cows to make the fermented cheese before they slaughter them, roast them on a fire and jump over the fire.
Turtle doves.
There's some turtle doves.
French hens.
Do you know, when I was younger, I imagined turtle doves were just turtles with little wings.
That's cute.
It's not. It's me being just stupid. I was a stupid child. You meant to say no, you weren't.
No, you weren't.
How do you know? You weren't there.
I just know that you're not, because you raised me as such an amazing child.
Fair enough. You managed to segue that into complimenting yourself, Evie. That was well done.
Yes, and complimenting you as well.
Not so sure. I think it was mainly a compliment for yourself. It was a compliment for yourself. We also still have the tradition of the Yule log. You've heard of the Yule log?
No.
She's a big lump of wood that is burned on Christmas Day, but it used to be burned on the shortest day, so on midwinter, in order to ensure that we didn't lose all of the light in the world forever. So it's very important that that log kept burning.
Did we need to jump over the
log? No, there was no jumping over the Yule log. We're done leaping over things. Okay? There's no more leaping at Christmas, except for the lords are leaping. Oh, if you're
then
a lord, you're allowed to leap.
Leaping. But what if there's a lord and it jumps over the log?
Well, what I'm saying is the Yule log is a hangover from those pagan days when it was about midwinter and it was about encouraging the sun. So by keeping the Yule log burning through the shortest day, if the sun didn't come back up, you still had some light from the Yule log and you could possibly use that to restart the sun. I don't quite know how.
What?
Maybe throw it at the sun and hope it caught up again. You'd have to have one heck of a throw on you, though.
Yeah. Throw it all the way into space through the galaxy to the sun.
Now, the other thing that changed in medieval times is that as things moved on, they did begin to celebrate Christmas.
But how was St. Nicholas?
We'll get to the fat man. And, you wait.
And we're not, presents.
We're not at the fat...
Courage.
We're not at the fat man yet. Just... follow the story through. Trust that I'll get you there.
I want to know how it was encouraged.
I will tell you, but it comes a bit later. We're in medieval times. There was no medieval Santa Claus, okay?
Medieval Santa.
Wearing full knightly armour and being very chivalrous. No. So, they did begin to celebrate Christmas rather than midwinter. That was when the transition happened over medieval times. Mm. It stopped being all about renewal of the seasons and it started being a bit more about a baby being born in a manger in Bethlehem.
Yeah, but I have a question.
Hmm?
How did it get the name Christmas?
Christ Mass. It is a mass, a celebration of Christ or Jesus.
Good point.
Yeah, but in medieval times, the big day that you look forward to, it wasn't the 25th of December. Instead, they look forward to January the 6th. Or Twelfth Night, because that was when the presents were exchanged. So you'd have had to have waited a little bit longer if you were medieval. You'd still be weeks away from getting your Christmas presents if you were a medieval child.
But then how is Santa Claus encouraged and how are the presents encouraged?
You need to put Fat Man out of your head for at least another few epochs, okay? We've got to get through a few other periods in history before we get to the jolly old Fat Man.
You're talking about presents.
Well, in medieval times, I mean, there weren't that many presents. We weren't at the gift-giving time. It was more just a feast day.
Okay.
Now, over time, these celebrations focus more on Christ's birth than the renewal of nature, as I've said. And the name Christmas, it's first recorded as being used in England in the year 1038. So that would have been right around the time of Edward the Confessor. And it's only like 20-odd years before... No, it's like 28 years before 1066 and the Battle of Hastings was when Christmas was first. But when the Normans came across from Europe, that's when we really got into it. So William the Conqueror, you can thank him for really putting Christmas on the map in this country. No, I know you don't like him for killing Harold, but you've got to weigh that up now against establishing Christmas as a celebration. So is it better... Would you have rather have had Harold and you'd have had Yule, where you celebrated on the 6th of January and you didn't get presents? Or would you rather have William the Conqueror and have Christmas on the 25th and get lots of prezzies?
I'm still mad with him for killing Harold, but I guess it is good.
Okay. We're starting to rehabilitate him in your eyes. That's the important thing. Though there were still some nods to nature, with houses being decorated with evergreens, such as holly, ivy and mistletoe. So, although we were moving across... There are some things that persisted from those old midwinter festivals, because what do we have? We still have bits of holly, don't we, downstairs?
Yeah, we have fake mistletoe.
And we have fake mistletoe, so we're still doing it to this day. And some people, the richer medieval people, they would also, you know, for their feast, we're not into Roman dainties anymore, they'd eat boar's heads, decorated boar's heads, so big pig heads, as their main Christmas feast.
With an orange or an apple stuffed up there.
Stuffed up their what?
Stuffed up their mouth.
In their mouth. You stuff it up somewhere else. And we shall not talk of that here, Evie, you rude girl. I don't know if they removed the tusks before they served, or if you just had to eat around the tusk.
They removed the tusks.
Well, I'm glad you know. They'd also sometimes wash their boar's head down with a special drink called mulled braggart.
was it made of?
It's made of extra strong beer mixed with honey, cinnamon, and with extra alcohol in the form of brandy chucked in for good measure.
I'm not allowed alcohol.
No, you're not. So you couldn't have braggot. Or if you could, you'll be allowed maybe a thimbleful of braggot.
What's a thimble?
It's a tiny little thing that goes on the end of your finger, so it's a tiny amount.
Okay.
Okay. I bet it tastes terrific. The Normans, with William the Conqueror, also introduced the idea of Christmas games. Which would be overseen by one lucky person who would be made the Lord of Misrule for the day.
And who did they choose?
It changed every year. And if you were lucky enough to be named the Lord of Misrule, you got to order everyone around for the Christmas games. They could actually, unlike today, I mean, I guess Twister's still a bit dangerous. You fell on your bottom a few times playing Twister.
Yeah, but I was fine.
But the Christmas games back in medieval times, they could be quite dangerous. Do you want me to give you an example?
Two examples.
I only have the one example.
Okay, then.
Take it or leave it.
Okay, take it.
I think you'll like the name of the game. If nothing else. The game was called Hot Cockles. It had nothing to do with the food, though. Mm. What would happen if you were playing Hot Cockles? One person would be blindfolded, so it's a good start, and then the other people would take it in turns to smack them hard on the bottom. Yeah? Good game so far?
No!
The blindfolded person then had to try and guess who had smacked them on the bottom. And if they guessed correctly, they were allowed to take the blindfold off, smack the person who had smacked them, and put the blindfold on them as well, so they'd be it. And then you'd just spend the afternoon happily, everyone smacking each other's bottoms, and that was a Christmas game.
Do another one.
No, that's the game we're playing this Christmas, you'll be pleased to know.
Oh, what the... This
after
is
we've,
just
after
great.
After we've eaten our Christmas dinner, we'll... blindfold you, and then we're all going to take it in turns to smack you on the bottom shouting hot cockles.
Oh,
okay?
But I will guess who it is because I know the texture of everyone in this family's hand because I have been holding and feeling their hands for years.
That's fine, but you're holding their hands. Do you think you can tell the texture of everyone's hands with your bottom?
Yes, because you've smacked me
through your pants
thousands of times.
I have not smacked you on the bottom thousands of times.
Since I was alive, you smacked me on the bottom like 5,000 times.
I have not smacked you on the bottom 5,000 times. Maybe, but only in fun.
Yes.
Yes. And then generally, you've started smacking me back.
Yeah.
Turns into a smack-off. Anyway, moving on from what may be, you know, violence... In our household. Another important addition to traditional Christmas celebrations was the introduction of Christmas carols, with the first examples being introduced in the year...
1843.
1426. Thanks to a clergyman called John Audley. So well done, John, for introducing the idea of the Christmas carol.
Hallelujah.
Indeed. Now, shall we move on again?
No.
Let's skip forward to the Tudors.
No, I hate the Tudors.
Well, let's see if you like the Christmas traditions. Because during a Tudor Christmas, on the 12th night, the 6th of January, a bean would be placed into a cake.
A bean?
One bean would be placed
what
into a cake.
What kind of bean?
I'm guessing a broad bean.
Okay, a fat bean.
A fat bean.
That's fine with me.
The person... who got the bean in their slice would then become the king of the bean.
Ooh, exciting. Or
if you were a man. If you were a woman, like you are, you wouldn't be able to become queen of the bean. You don't be the bean queen. You would have to pick a boy, a man, to become king of the bean.
But what if you don't pick any boy?
No, you have to. Otherwise, they'd throw you out of the party. So you don't get to be Queen Bean. You've got to pick a King Bean, I'm afraid.
Now that's just plain old rude.
It is rude, but...
First, women can't vote, now this.
Well, women couldn't vote as well in Tudor times, so don't worry about that. You couldn't vote and you couldn't be Queen Bean. But whoever became King Bean, whether they got it in their slice or they'd been picked by the lady who got it, the prize was that everybody had to imitate them.
Imitate?
So they had to do... whatever the king did. So if the king took a drink, they'd have to take a drink. If the king went for a wee, everyone would have to go for a wee.
Ew!
And it became the basis of the game that you saw on Dougie, Copy the King. You remember the episode where they're playing Copy the King?
Yes.
That comes from a Tudor Christmas game.
Cool.
Isn't that cool? You can tell other people when they're watching that Dougie episode. You see this? It comes from a Tudor Christmas game, would you believe? That involved the King Bean.
Yeah, but Dad, if I was having a Christmas party with... I'd definitely choose him to be King Bean.
That's nice. I will have to bleep his name, though, because we don't put other people's names in, do we?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. But it's nice that you would pick your friend. The Tudors also loved a bit of dressing up.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Fancy dresses. Nice.
Yeah, and fancy dresses so that they could dance. So they loved a good dress up and dance.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
So after saying that you didn't like the Tudors, you're starting to like the sound of a Tudor Christmas. Let's see if I can get you with this next bit. The other thing that was really cool about the Tudor period is that was the time at which sugar started to be introduced to British diets. At least for the richest people, anyway. So they tip boatloads of sugar into already sweet wine for drinking, and they would hold things called Christmas sugar banquets, where everything would be made of sugar. So sugar models on the tables of castles, all of the cutlery would be sugar, all of the plates would be sugar. You would be eating nothing but sugar the entire night.
No.
What do you mean no?
You get sore teeth, sore tummy.
A lot of them did have very, very poor teeth, but they loved the sugar. And it helped with the dancing because they had so much energy.
But then it would keep you awake all night.
Yes, but they were going to stay awake all night anyway because they were dancing. It was a Christmas sugar banquet. They lasted till 10 a.m.
I'd never, ever go to a sugar banquet.
Boo. Okay, how about this then? The Tudors also introduced the mince pie to Christmas. You like mince pies, don't you?
Yes. No, I like the Tudors, but not the sugar banquet.
Well, the Tudor mince pie was a bit different to the one you have. Because rather than what we have today, which is a mix of fruit and spices inside the pie, they had minced meat in their pies. So they were meat pies, not sweet pies. Although they may have been sweet meat pies.
Oh.
So
I don't want gammon pies.
Yeah.
Pour syrup in the pie. Disgusting. With meat too. Disgusting.
Fair enough.
I like the mince pies today.
You prefer this. Should we jump forwards again then?
The Tudors, yeah.
The Tudors have put you off, have they, with their meat mince pies?
No, but at least they brought in mince pies.
Okay. Let's talk about the Georgians. When all the kings were named George. George really? 1, George 2, George 3, yep. Honestly, they just kept calling the kings George.
Really?
And they,
real original.
They were quite a romantic bunch with the Georgians. From them, we have the tradition of kissing under the mistletoe, smoochy, smoochy kisses. So, when you get old enough and you kiss your special someone under the mistletoe, you can thank the Georgians.
I definitely know who to kiss under the mistletoe.
Do not tell me.
I won't.
Fathers do not need to know that kind of information. Good. They also invented tinsel as a decoration. Though it wasn't shiny plastic at the time.
Oh.
But the concept of tinsel, Georgian, well done them. But while by the start of the 1800s, Christmas was looking a little bit more familiar, we need to thank the Victorians for creating the Christmas that we still know and enjoy today, really. It's a Victorian invention, the modern Christmas. And it's all because Queen Victoria decided to marry a German bloke called Albert.
Good one, Albert.
Albert is so important in the story of Christmas.
I love a good person called Albert.
Well, you'd have loved the Prince Albert, because
I have a good feeling about him.
He fondly remembered the Christmases that he'd experienced as a child in Germany. So he decided to bring lots of the traditions from Germany across with him when he came to England. And him and Victoria, they had like 9 kids. So they had lots of children to entertain. He was like, do you know what? A German Christmas is the most entertaining Christmas. One of the main ideas that he introduced was the Christmas tree. Because prior to Prince Albert, English and British people hadn't had Christmas trees. They'd been decorated in Europe for over 300 years, but it took until 1848 for the idea to catch on in Britain. So under 200 years, we've had Christmas trees for less than 200 years in this country. Mm. Yeah. Which is amazing to think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cool.
The 1840s, when the Christmas tree was introduced, also saw the introduction of the first Christmas card in 1843, which luckily arrived 3 years after the introduction of the first stamp, so you could actually send them.
Phew.
The first stamp being, of course,
Queen Victoria's face.
Yes, it was known as the Penny Black, and it came out in 1840 exactly.
The Penny Black.
Another important thing that was invented in Victorian times. When you look at a Christmas table, what's on it?
Food. Lots and lots of food, like turkey,
before the food,
mince pies.
Before the food gets there,
sprouts.
You've got your plate, you've got your knife and your fork. What else have you got sitting there on your plate waiting for you?
Napkin.
Yes, but also...
Cracker.
A cracker.
Pop, bang, bang, pop, bang.
The very first Christmas cracker was invented by a confectioner, which is someone who makes sweets, called Tom Smith in 1847.
What did you get inside the cracker?
You got sweets. He was a confectioner.
Mm. I wouldn't get those crackers.
And although he invented the first one in 1847, he didn't have the idea to add a bang for another 13 years.
So they were silent?
They were silent up until 1860 when he went, do you know what would excite? What would create more excitement here? Let's make it do a bang. Let's put some gunpowder in this.
They put gunpowder in it.
Only a very small amount.
But bang.
Yeah.
Not explosions.
No, I mean, if you overdid a cracker, there was the great cracker explosion of 1861 when someone put way too much gunpowder in the cracker and it blew up three houses in London. That's not true. That's a lie. I need to point out there was never any great cracker explosion. They got the amount of gunpowder right from day dot, don't worry.
Phew.
Though Charles Dickens wrote A Christmas Carol, which was also published in 1840s.
I love the story.
You love A Christmas Carol?
Yeah, especially Marley.
And although that story still had the people of Britain eating traditional Christmas goose,
it was the
Victorians who introduced the now standard Christmas turkey.
Here comes the turkey, the Christmas turkey.
Though, as you know, in our family, we are traditionalists and we go back to our Neolithic roots and still eat pig, and more pig at Christmas.
And Brussels sprouts.
A slightly less Neolithic, I think, but the pig is very much in keeping. It's you know, it's Hogsmas, really, for us. Though, you'll be pleased to know that we will, as the Victorians did before us, because they introduced this as well, we will enjoy a Christmas pudding for afters. That's a Victorian invention as well. So your Christmas turkey, your cracker, your Christmas cards, your decorating of a tree indoors, all of these things, Christmas pudding, all Victorian inventions. Okay?
Okay.
It was also the Victorians who made sure that we opened our presents on the 25th of December, Christmas Day. Now, Victorian children's Christmas presents, they were not quite as flashy as they are today. They were normally quite minimalist, if I'm honest. It'd just be a few sweets, maybe a handmade toy that the parents had made for the child.
But who brought in?
Well, wealthier kids, though, kids whose family had a bit more money, they started getting some proper toys. Things like model trains, things that were sort of mimicking the latest technology of the time. So we were starting to get closer to a modern Christmas with the presents. And you're right, we're going to have to talk about how we sort all of that out. But first, while the kids will get their presents on the 25th, the Christmas box tips, which were given to servants and tradesmen, they weren't given out until the next day, the 26th of December.
Also known as Boxing Day.
After those Christmas boxes, which itself was a reminder of the day when alms boxes, which is the charity boxes in the church, were opened and distributed to the poor over the centuries before. So what used to happen on Boxing Day is the money that the church had been collecting over the Christmas period would be opened up and would be distributed to all the people who needed a little bit of extra help.
Oh,
and that's what lovely. Boxing Day is about.
That's lovely.
Isn't it?
Now I want to give some of my money to the poor.
Mm. That's fine. You can do that. You're so excited for charity. And to be honest, these days we have quite a good tax system. So some of your money will go to help people who need benefits, people who need a bit of extra support, regardless of whether you want to or not. You can give extra if you want.
I want to give all my money.
Well, you need some for living.
Yeah, no.
We'll discuss finances later. Don't worry, you're a bit young yet.
Okay.
Now, most Victorian families, they also went to church on Christmas Day. And it was during the Victorian era that the words of many of the most popular carols, including such bangers as Good King Wenceslas, who looked out on the Feast of Stephen.
Oh, don't bring that in, Dad.
Once in Royal David City, do you know that one? Once in Royal David City stood a lonely cattle shed. No?
No.
How about...
Away in
no, that's not one.
Angel.
How about... Oh, come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Oh,
yes, I know that one.
Yeah. So they
oh,
are
come,
all...
Oh, come, Emmanuel.
I they are all one. Victorian bangers, those ones, yeah? Better off people... people who had a bit more, they would also provide gifts or they'd host Christmas feasts for their poorer neighbours.
That's lovely.
Like Scrooge did, again, in A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. That wasn't what Scrooge did, you know, bringing the feast to Bob Cratchit's house. That happened all over the country. That wasn't just Scrooge being nice. That was something that lots of rich people would do for the less well-off neighbours and people who worked for them. And... if you lived in the country and you lived on the land of a lord or a noble...
landlord.
Yeah. They would throw an annual Christmas party at their mansion and you would be invited to come in, so long as you wiped your feet. You grubby little commoner. You'd be allowed to come in and look at their fine art and eat some of their fine food and then you'd be sent back off to your hovel of a cottage to work their land for another year. But it was nice that they let you in the house.
I still think they should still have the... I think they should just let them take their shoes off instead.
Oh, no. Have you smelt peasants' feet?
No.
Oh, cheesy.
I don't care. Oh.
They were having a bath maybe once a week. Those were some cheesy feet.
Yeah, because the rich didn't provide them much.
Yeah.
And...
that doesn't change the fact that they smelt.
Yeah, but that's because of the rich.
Right. Evie, you're getting dangerously close to socialism here, darling. Are you telling me you're a socialist? Are you part of the Red Menace?
Maybe. No.
It's a good thing, don't you worry. We're all secretly socialist in this house.
Wait, what does socialist mean?
It means you care about other people, essentially.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I'm a socialist, then.
As opposed to conservatives who care about keeping their own things for themselves. Mm. Mm.
Well,
I'm really simplifying, but that's pretty much it.
I'll only keep my dirty dogs.
Yeah, that's cool. Anyway, moving back away from politics to the fun and joy of Christmas, which knows no politics. Because there's only one tradition that's more important than everything we've talked about to this point.
Being with your friends and family.
God, no. Because Victorian children were the first to regularly receive toys as presents, there needed to be a way to organise getting them all where they needed to be on Christmas Eve. There needed to be some kind of person who could organise a system to get all the toys where they needed to go.
Are you saying what I think you're saying?
And that was why, during the Victorian era, Father Christmas began his tradition of delivering the presents to the children.
To the good children, not the bad children.
Well, we can get into the ups and downs and the goods and the bads. But this was the time at which Father Christmas, he saw there was a gap that needed filling and he went, I am just the person to fill that gap. Now, Father Christmas had been around before he started with the presents. And what he'd originally done is he dressed in green, not red. And he would go around people's houses and he would herald the coming of spring. So he would spread joy by telling people stories of how great the next year was going to be.
Spring. Mm. Okay.
And he'd bring gifts of food.
Positive.
Yeah, it was
He's
positive.
A very positive man.
His original name was Saint Nicholas, a saint who spent his life giving gifts to the poor, and whose feast day is celebrated on the 6th of December. Now, in Poland, they still celebrate St. Nicholas's feast day. And as a result, Polish children get their presents a full 19 days before you. Because Father Christmas, because they're celebrating his feast day, he gives them their presents first.
He likes them more than us.
He doesn't like them more. He respects the fact that they're celebrating his feast day. So he's like, do you know what? I've got a lot of kids to give stuff to all over the world. It actually helps me out if one country I get done a little bit early. So the Polish kids have already got their presents, which takes a little bit of the load off the big guy when it comes to Christmas Eve, okay? Did you celebrate his feast day?
No, because I didn't know about it.
Excuses, Evie. If you didn't celebrate it, you don't get your presents, all right? Until Christmas Day, like the rest of us.
I'm not even sure I'm getting any presents.
You are, I'm sure you are. The elves will let us know. But he saw that there was a need for someone to organise presents. So he decided to rebrand. He changed his name to Santa Claus. He got fat. Because traditionally, St. Nicholas was a very thin man. He decided to pile on some pounds because he was going to be working through winter. He needed to stay warm. So he needed the fat reserves. He hired himself a workforce of elves. And he bought some cheap land at the North Pole.
But how did he get the elves?
He knew a guy. When you're a saint, you get to know various other mythical creatures. It's just part of the deal. And he bought some cheap land at the North Pole because not a lot of people want to live there. Hence, the property prices drop. From his new base in the North Pole, he began making toys. And he rebranded himself by donning a snazzy red outfit, as was immortalized in the poem, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas."
And all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
A poem that was written by a man called Clement Clark Moore in 1822. And since that rebranding, Father Christmas, St. Nicholas, Santa Claus, has been yearly delivering those presents to all of the children.
Underneath the Christmas tree, I find the presents underneath the Christmas tree.
Because the great thing about being a saint is, he'd already died. Because he died hundreds of years before, but he was able to use his saintly powers to come back. So now, there's no stopping him. Hundreds of years from now, he'll still be doing it, because he loves a bit of it.
So, there's a ghost delivering us presents, dressed in a red suit, going around the world every night.
I don't think
there's a ghost.
I don't think he'd appreciate being called a ghost. He's a saint. Different rules apply to them. He's still corporal. He's eating your milk. He's eating your cookies. He's drinking your milk. Ghosts would not do that. He is manifest.
Okay, then I'll call him G for ghost. Okay, Saint G.
No, he's definitely Saint N. All of his monogrammed things say N for Nicholas.
But I still think it's weird that he's been around for thousands of years and he's
No, he hasn't
dead.
Been around for thousands of years. He's been around for hundreds of years.
He's dead.
He's not dead. He's a
saint.
He's
kind of dead.
He's kind of dead. And yes, some of his bones are kept in a place in Ireland that we could go and visit if you wanted to.
Sure, why not?
We'll go and do a pilgrimage at some point. That'll be fine.
Sure, why not?
But he hasn't let it hold him back, Evie. He saw that the kids needed someone to organise things and he thought, as a saint, I have all of the skills and I have all of the relevant things that I need to be able to do this job, which is why he does it. If I tried to do it, I might do 1 year or 2 years, but then I'd be bloody tired and I wouldn't keep going. You can't imagine me being Father Christmas year on year, could you?
No.
I'm too lazy and grumpy.
Yeah, and also you're my dad.
Right. I can do two things.
Yeah, but you would need to make money for the house. And
right.
And spend it on a 2,000 and million 100 pound sleigh.
Is that how much your sleigh costs?
Sleighs are very expensive. Do not buy a sleigh.
Okay.
But you can buy a sledge.
All right.
Sledges are way, 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 way cheaper.
You seem very certain of your numbers here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that, Evie, is the end of our Christmas episode, where we've gone and quickly covered 10,000 years of Christmas celebrations in Britain. The question for you is, which period in history would you most like to experience Christmas? Out of all the ones we've talked about.
None of them.
None of them? You don't want to go back to Saturnalia and try that? Roman times? Have a Roman knees up? You don't want to have a medieval feast?
I have five answers.
All right, okay.
All of them, none of them, one of them.
Those are just the options. Which one are you going to pick?
Haven't decided yet.
Okay, fine.
In fact, I go and do all of them.
One by one. Well,
if I could have one day of each tradition, I would do it.
Fantastic. So, Evie, that was your last episode of 2023.
Next, people, it will be in 2024.
It will. So do you have a message for our poddy peeps to sign off the year?
Yeah.
What's your message to the poddy peeps?
We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And enjoy this episode because it's the last one in 2023. Have a very Merry Christmas, guys, and I hope you get lots of presents.
That's a lovely message, if a bit saccharine and sweet. My message is just don't smack each other on the bottoms, guys.
And also, have a great time at Christmas. Bye.
T'was the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads, and Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon, on the breast of new-fallen snow, gave the lustre of midday to objects below, when, what to my wondering eyes should appear, but a miniature sleigh, and eight tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had on his back, and he looked like a peddler opening a pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke of it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk and, laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Hi there, it's Emma, Chief Organiser at Consistently Eccentric, here to remind you all that if you like what you hear, you can catch up with all previous episodes and session series by searching for us on Acast, Spotify, and iTunes. How fancy.
You can also join us on Instagram at Consistently Eccentric Podcast, where we update on the weekly episode and post all of our bonus content for you lucky lot. See you next week.